Yes, hell if I care. You could live your life separately from mine, play your part, and when enough years go by, even take on a discreet lover.
Who was this guy, and what made him so ice cold? In all my years on Earth, and all my time spent with the ruthless men of the outfit, I'd never met anyone quite so cynical. Even the most horrid men wanted love and loyalty and marriage. Even they wanted children. And what do I give you in return? I elevated my chin, pursing my lips.
You eat, he bit out.
I could do that, I thought grimly.
You play the dutiful wife role,
he took another step. I instinctively pressed myself harder against his drawers, but there was no escape and nowhere else to go. In two steps, he was going to be flush against me, just like Angelo had been last night, and I'd have to meet the inferno of his body and the frost of his eyes. He lifted the tips of a ruined, maroon-hued tie, eating the entire distance between us in one purposeful stride.
I was planning a trip to D.C., but seeing as your father is up to all sorts of trouble, I decided to stay in town. That means that on Friday we'll have guests from D.C. You will dress impeccably. You will cut the engagement tails bullshit in favor of a proper, decent version, and you will entertain them flawlessly as you were brought up to do. After dinner, you will play the piano for them, and after that, you will retire to the West Wing with me, seeing as they will be spending the night in the East Wing.
Sleeping in your bed? I barked out a laugh. Wasn't that convenient?
You'll sleep in the next room.
His body was now hovering over mine, and he was touching me without really touching me. He poured heat, my own curves drank thirstily, and even though I hated him, I didn't want him to step away. I opened my mouth to answer, but nothing came out. I wanted to refuse, but also knew that by agreeing to his deal, I'd have the chance to actually live a decent life. But I couldn't surrender to him willingly and completely. Not so fast. He laid down his rules, his expectations, and his price for his messed up version of my freedom. We were striking a verbal deal, and the need to put a clause or two of my own was primal. I have one condition, I said. He curved one inquisitive eyebrow, the tip of the tie in his hand gliding its way to my neck. I raised the shears in a knee-jerk reaction, ready to stab his black heart if he touched me inappropriately. But not only did he not recoil, he actually awarded me with that smile I'd been wondering about. He had dimples. Two. The right one deeper than the left. The tie fluttered across my shoulder blade, making my nipples pucker inside my bra, and I prayed to God it was padded enough for him not to notice. I clenched from the inside, my stomach tumbling and dipping. A delicious ache spread in my womb like warm goo.
Speak now or forever hold your peace, Nemesis.
His lips fluttered so close to mine for a split second, I wouldn't object if he kissed me. Jesus, what was wrong with my body? I loathed him, but I also craved him terribly. I looked up, tensing my jaw. I will not be made a fool. If I'm expected to be faithful, so will you. He moved the tie from my shoulder blade, dipping it down into the slit of my cleavage before moving it back up to my neck. I shuddered, fighting to keep my eyes open. A pool of wetness gathered in my cotton underwear. His eyes were dead and serious when he asked,
"That's your one condition."
"And the notes," I added as an afterthought. "I know you know about them because you ruined my kiss with Angelo. Do not read my notes. The wooden chest is mine to open, read, and explore whenever I'm ready." He looked so blasé, there was no way I could detect whether he tampered with the box or not. And by now, I knew my future husband would never willingly volunteer any information to me. My future husband. It was happening. I take verbal contracts quite seriously. He brushed the tie over my cheek, his smile still intact. So do I. I gulped, feeling his hand prying my fingers open. The shears dropped to the floor beside us, and he squeezed my palm in his version of a handshake. Our hearts were pounding together in a completely different way from when Angelo and I were tangled in the darkened alcove like two messy teenagers fumbling for their first kiss yesterday. This felt dangerous and feral. It felt exhilarating somehow, like he could tear me apart, no matter how many shears I arm myself with. I forced myself to remember that he'd slept with Emily yesterday while being engaged to me. To keep in mind his cruel words when he thought I'd slept with Angelo on the same night I presented my engagement ring to Chicago's highest society. He was not my playmate. He was my monster. Wolf picked up our entwined hands and brought them level with my chin. I watched in fascination as his dark, big hand enclosed my ivory small one. Little black hairs peppered each finger above his knuckles, and his arms were veiny, tan, and thick. Yet somehow our size difference didn't look ridiculous. My heart stammered in my chest as Senator Keaton bent his head down, his lips brushing my ear.
Now clean the mess you've created. By evening, you will be given a new laptop connected to Wi-Fi and a Northwestern brochure. By night, you will have your dinner and a snack. And tomorrow morning, after breakfast, you will practice the piano and shop for a dress that will make our guests foam at the mouth. Am I understood?
He was crystal clear, but I chose to pull away, bat my eyelashes, and answer him with one of the taunting smirks he was so fond of. I lacked real power in the situation between us, so sarcasm didn't cost me a thing, and I found I had it in spades. I brushed past him and strode away, leaving him alone in his walk-in closet. For someone who doesn't negotiate, you just went pretty far. He chuckled behind me, shaking his head.
I'm going to bury you, Nemesis.
Chapter 6 Wolf. I tugged at the new yellow tie, tossing it on the floor. Too calm. I slid a green one from the rack, wrapping it over my neck before thinking better of it. Too chirpy. I plucked out a silky black velvet one and pressed it against my white shirt. Perfect. My sexual frustration was getting the best of me. I could barely walk straight without thinking of dipping my cock into the nearest open mouth in my vicinity. It had been days since the last time I sank my dick in a wet pussy, and the last encounter with the fairer sex was lackluster, to say the least. Emily, of course, was a magnificent bore to fuck, just a tad more responsive than a corpse, and possessing around the same amount of charm. Although, in her defense, I was more invested in fucking the rage out of my system than making it bearable for either of us. She was pathetic enough to fake an orgasm, and I was screwed up enough to pretend I didn't notice. It took me 1 second from the moment I laid eyes on Francesca and the blue-eyed Bandini at the wedding to realize that they were already halfway into their foreplay, whether they knew it or not. Her eyes, even in the darkened niche, zinged with such intensity. The thought of dragging her across the ballroom and fucking her on the royal couple's table as punishment crossed my mind. But acting jealous and possessive was, one, not in my nature, and two, unconstructive to my final goal. Besides, since when was I into teenagers? It was therefore counterproductive to let them have one last rodeo. If I tainted it, I couldn't get attached to it. So I let Bandini stain it for me. Thoroughly. Now Nemesis surprised me by wanting exclusivity. I supposed she would figure out, after weeks of being fucked rough and ruthlessly, that the arrangement was not in her interest and send me on my way to the nearest available mistress. Kristen, of course, was no longer an option since she tried to run the piece about my engagement to Rossi. Consequently, Kristen got demoted from senior reporter to researcher. I called her editor and informed him that the lovely blonde he'd hired fresh out of Yale a decade ago was getting in bed with the wrong type of people. The people whose lives she was covering. Mine. It was Friday night, and time for the big charade. Secretary of Energy Brian Hatch was coming over with his wife to discuss his support in my future campaign. I had nearly 6 full years to serve as a senator, but the objective was clear. Presidency. It was, admittedly, part of the reason Miss Rossi was now the proud owner of one of the most expensive engagement rings in the state. Adjusting my image from someone who shoved his cock into enough mouths to silence the better half of the nation to the savior of a mob princess would earn me some much-needed points. Her noble upbringing was a nice touch as a first lady, too. Not to mention, I'd mercilessly kill her father's business in the process, despite my so-called affection toward my wife. They'd call me a martyr, and she'd never be able to call me on my bullshit. I tied my newly bought black tie and scowled at the mirror in front of me. The walk-in closet had been thoroughly cleaned and the ruined items replaced. I padded the depth of my drawer for the framed picture I'd been looking at every time I needed to remember where I came from and where I wanted to go. It wasn't there. Slowly, I pulled the drawer all the way out until it was fully opened. The photo still wasn't there. Francesca either destroyed it or took it with her. My money was on the former, since she was positively certified after finding out I'd fucked her boyfriend's latest toy. Was she expecting me to watch her publicly grind over another man's cock and hand her a condom? Either way, she'd taken it too far. I stormed out of my room, stalking my way to the east wing. Sterling jumped in my way down the hall just as she exited her own room. She flung her arms in the air, cackling like a happy hen.
"Your fiancé is looking ravishing, Senator Keaton. I cannot wait for you to see how
She did not complete the sentence. I bulldozed past her wordlessly, straight to Francesca's room. Sterling stumbled after me before I barked, "Don't you even dream about it, you old hag." I threw the door to Nemesis's room open without knocking. This time, she really did it. The clothes and ties were just money and meaningless in the grand scheme of things. The picture, however, was priceless. I found my bride sitting in front of her vanity mirror wearing a tight black velvet dress. It looked like we coordinated something other than trying to stab each other, a lit cigarette dangling from the corner of her luscious lips. She was shoving mud into a pot, gardening in the middle of her bedroom, in a Chanel evening dress. She was crazy. And she was my crazy. What in the fresh hell did I get myself into? I waltzed to her briskly, plucking the cigarette from her mouth and snapping it in half in one hand. She looked up, batting her eyelashes. She was a smoker, another thing I loathed about her, and people in general. At this rate, I was seriously contemplating getting to know this girl just so I could destroy her more thoroughly. Even though I decided upon requesting her hand that I didn't want to be privy to anything about her, other than maybe how her warm, sleek cunt felt as I pummeled into it. "Do not smoke inside my house," I growled. My voice leaked fury, and that pissed me off even more. I was never angry, never affected, and, above all, never one to give one single fuck about anything other than myself. She rose to her feet, slanting her head slightly with an amused smile.
You mean our house?
Don't play games with me, Nemesis.
Then don't act like a toy, Narcissus.
She was in rare form today. That was what I got for sitting at the negotiation table. Served me right. I pushed her against the wall with one swift movement, snarling in her face. Where is the picture? Her expression switched from glee to dread, the smirk falling from her puffy lips. I looked down at her curly black eyelashes. Her eyes were marbles, too brutally blue to look real, and I wanted her skin to match them in color as I choked her for being so stubborn. If only I'd known how much of a headache she'd be, I'd have probably resisted the temptation to take her away from her old man. But she was my problem now, and I wasn't one to admit defeat, let alone be dominated by a teeny bopper. I thought she was going to play dumb. Any other weak woman would, but Francesca was in a mood to reinforce the fact she was not a pushover. Since our deal, I'd almost been lured to believe she was contained. She went horseback riding every day and toured Northwestern, accompanied by Smithy, my driver, her pain-in-the-ass housekeeper, Clara, and her cousin, Andrea. They all arrived at my mansion as though they were about to take a tour of the White House. Cousin Andrea looked like a lost member of the Kardashians with her hair extensions, fake tan, and tight clothes. She was in the habit of snapping her gum as a method of completing a sentence. I swore she used it as a period.
Nice vase.
Pop.
Are you guys legit in a relationship? Because he's a little old.
Pop.
Do you think you should have a bachelorette party in Cabo? I've never been.
Pop. Sterling told me Francesca practiced the piano in the mornings, ate three meals a day, and gardened in her spare time. I thought she was coming around. I thought wrong.
I broke it,
she said, raising her chin defiantly. She was full of surprises, this one, and today I was particularly in the mood for an eventless evening.
By accident, she added. I'm not one for mindless vandalism.
But I am. I took the bait, grinning. I was more concerned about the fact that the cleaners had probably tossed away the picture in the broken frame than anything else. It was the last picture I'd had of us together. It was my entire world encased in cheap glass. My bride was lucky I wasn't above the law just yet. I could mar her beautiful neck in that moment. She offered me a polite, cold smile.
But of course you are.
Tell me, Nemesis, what did I break of yours? I challenged her through gritted teeth, getting farther in her face and crushing her small body with my large one.
Why, my dear fiancé, you broke my heart and then my spirit.
I was about to say something when Sterling knocked on the wooden door frame softly, shoving her cotton-haired head between the crack. It was only then that I realized I had my knee between Francesca's thighs and that both women were looking at my knee with eyes wide in shock, one from the doorway, the other with parted lips, her eyelids heavy. I took a step back. Sterling swallowed.
Sir, Mr. Secretary and his wife are here to see you. Should I tell them you're busy?
Snorting, I shook my head, scanning Francesca with disdain one last time. Never been more bored in my life. I supposed dinner went well, considering Francesca and I used our utensils strictly on our poached pears and herbed lamb as opposed to on each other. Brian and I sat across from one another, discussing my future plans before we even got to the main course. While my striking, entrancing fiancé, Brian's words, not mine, asked his bland wife all about her mind-numbing charity foundations, including her Adopt-a-Clown aid for hospitalized children, and Bros for Hoes, Hoes being literal fire hose organization. Brian was never going to live down the last title his wife chose. Francesca, however, nodded and smiled, even though I knew, without a shadow of a doubt, that she was bored to tears. All she needed was a customary wave to rival Kate Middleton in the etiquette department. I was strangely and annoyingly pleased with her, especially considering the fact she just managed to ruin the only thing I truly cared about in this whole expensive and pointless mansion, the picture. I was dismembering my main course now, a lobster, imagining it was my future wife's limbs, when Gallia Hatch perked up from her dish and shot another enthusiastic, borderline deranged glance at Francesca. Her hair was bleached and sprayed to a point it clattered in dry chunks atop her head, and her face so plastic she could pass as a Tupperware container. Not to mention there was a medieval witch somewhere who wanted her dreadful dress back.
Oh my, now I know why you are so familiar. You were leading a charity too, weren't you, darling? Back in Europe. France, if I'm not mistaken.
She clicked her fork against her champagne glass, making a grand, idiotic announcement of some sort. I was about to snort out a dismissal. Nemesis only cared about her horses, garden, and Angelo Bandini, not necessarily in that order. My plus one's ears pinked immediately, and she set her utensils on her half-full plate.
Switzerland.
She dabbed at the corner of her mouth with her napkin for non-existent crumbs of food. I stopped listening to Brian gushing about the Secretary of State and turned my attention to the ladies' conversation. Francesca looked down, and a hint of her cleavage caught my eye. Her milky tits were pressed together in a tight bra. Looking away was not in my near future. Dying of blue balls might be.
Fascinating charity it was. I remember there was some gardening involved. You gave us a tour a few years back. I couldn't stop blabbing for months afterward about the sweet American girl who showed us the gardens.
Gallia hooted loudly. My eyes dragged from my wife's chest to her face. Her blush deepened, her face so fresh and youthful even under the minimal makeup she applied. She didn't want me to know. I could see no reason she'd withhold the information from me, other than fearing that I'd actually take a liking to her if I knew that she was philanthropic. No trouble there, darling.
Did you know your wife is also a patron?
Brian raised his thick gray eyebrows at me when he realized I wasn't paying attention to his words. I did now. And although she possessed admirable first lady qualities, including her beauty, wits, and ability to entertain women as thick as Gallia, who could drive a monkey into alcoholism, I found myself thoroughly aggravated. Francesca had officially proven to have too much personality than necessary. It was time to clip her black-inked nemesis wings.
Naturally. I threw my napkin on the table, signaling the four servants standing against each of the walls of my dining room to clear out our plates ahead of dessert.
Francesca avoided my gaze, somehow sensing how irritated I was. She could read me fairly well by now. Another thing to add to the never-ending list of things I disliked about her. When her foot found mine under the table and the sharp, pointy heel kicked my loafers in warning, I realized that I wanted a refund on my deal with Arthur Rossi. His daughter wasn't a toy or a weapon. She was a liability.
We grew self-sustaining vegetable gardens in poor parts of the country, mainly those areas that employed refugees and immigrants who lived in severe circumstances,
Nem provided, sitting back and running her long, thin fingers over her neck, avoiding my gaze. Her heel traveled up to my knee and then toward my inner thigh. I dragged my chair back before she had the chance to smash my balls with her stilettos. Two can play this game.
Is everything okay?
Gallia asked Francesca with a concerned smile as my fiancé's hand flew to her lips. At the same time, I raised my leg under the table, pressing my heel between her thighs. It was a knee-jerk reaction on her part, as if she forgot something on those lips. And I had a knee-jerk reaction of my own when my cock stood at attention at the gesture, as if saying, "Yes, Nemesis, I'm the thing that's missing from your mouth." That kiss on the museum stairs felt like a first kiss, but after she'd bragged about sleeping with Angelo plenty of times and probably rode half the outfit, I concluded that my future wife was simply a very convincing kisser. If I could see the same disgust on her face again after putting my lips on hers, I'd remember the cold bitch who reminded me so much of her asshole father.
I could use a cigarette.
Francesca smiled apologetically, pushing her chair back and relieving her groin from my hard-pressed foot, which no doubt put pressure on her clit.
Such a pretty girl, such a filthy habit.
Gallia scrunched her nose, not missing a chance to patronize her younger, prettier companion. I happen to like my fiancé filthy, I wanted to bite out, but of course, I kept the unwarranted reaction to myself. Smoking was a vice, and vices were weaknesses. I didn't allow for any of them in my life. I drank very casually with strict control over the amount, quality, and frequency of my drinks. Other than that, I did not consume junk food, did not bet, smoke, do drugs, or even play Best Friends and Candy Crush. Zero addictions, other than Arthur Rossi's misery, of course. I couldn't get enough of that shit.
May I be excused?
Francesca cleared her throat. I waved her off impatiently. Make it fast. After dessert, which Brian and I didn't touch, yet Gallia consumed it in its entirety and even asked for a second serving, I noticed that Francesca took two bites of her own before declaring it was sinfully good, but she was too full. That boarding school was worth every penny. Afterward, we retired with our drinks to the salon to listen to my bride-to-be play the piano. Since Nem was 19, practically a baby in the world I operated in, it was of essence to show that she was well-bred, soft-spoken, and destined to become American royalty. The three of us sat on the upholstered sofas overlooking the piano as Francesca took a seat. The entire round room had shelves stacked with books for walls. It was my final touch when entertaining colleagues and peers, but having a wife who could play the instrument was even more impressive. Francesca arranged her dress on her seat with admirable precision, her back straight as an arrow, her neck long and delicate, begging to be bruised. Her fingers floated over the keys, flirting, barely touching them. She took her time admiring the piece I'd inherited from my parents. The late Keatons were big on classical music. They'd been begging for me to learn up until the day they died. Brian and Gallia held their breaths, staring at what I had no choice but to look at myself. My fiancé. So painfully beautiful in her black velvet dress, her hair secured in a French twist as she gazed adoringly at an antique piano, caressing it with her fingers while wearing an enchanted smile on her face. She was, to my utter displeasure, much more than an ivory pawn, expensive and striking, but useless and still. She was a living thing with a pulse you could feel from across the room, and for the first time since I took her from her father, I truly wished I hadn't. Not only because of the picture, but because she was not going to be easy to tame. And difficult, I'd decided from a very young age, was a flavor I found distasteful. She began to play Chopin. Her fingers moved with grace, but it was the look on her face that betrayed her. The intense pleasure music brought to her both mesmerized and enraged me. She looked like she was coming, her head thrown back, her eyes closed, her lips humming silently to the music. She was chasing the notes with her lips. I shifted on the couch, looking to my left at the hatches as the room grew smaller and hotter with the dramatic music bouncing on the walls. Galia was smiling and nodding, unaware of the fact that her husband was sporting a hard-on the size of her arm. Up until now, I had no issue with Brian Hatch. In fact, I quite liked him, despite his incompetence to take care of a goldfish, let alone occupy a seat in the cabinet. This, however, changed my view of him. My things were mine, not to be admired, not to be desired, not to be touched. Suddenly, the need to ruin the moment for my young bride-to-be was overwhelming, almost violent. My provocative fiancé, who had the guts to fuck another man on the night I'd presented her to my colleagues and peers after having put an engagement ring on her finger that cost more than some people's houses, would most definitely pay. Dispassionately and oh so smugly, I raised my tumbler of whiskey to my lips, standing up and sauntering to Francesca. Since I was positioned behind her back, she wouldn't see me even if she opened her eyes. But she didn't, caught in a trance of art and desire. She was dripping lust on the floor for our guests to see, and they gulped every drop of it, so much so that I had to make a point both to them and to her. With every step I took, the tune under her fingers became louder and more dramatic. The piece reached its peak just as I planted the first soft kiss on her shoulder blade from behind, causing her eyes to snap open and her body to jerk with surprise. She kept her fingers on the piano, still playing, but the rest of her body shuddered as my lips dragged along her soft, warm neck, sinking to the spot behind her ear for another seductive kiss. "Play away, Nemesis. You're giving us quite a show, coming all over my antique piano. Are you ready to try to measure up to Emily?" I could feel her skin blossoming with heat, quivering with passion as my lips moved again, over her shoulder, biting into her inviting flesh, dipping my teeth to her soft skin in front of our guests and exhibiting terrible lack of self-control that made me want to punch myself in the face. Francesca messed up her notes, her fingers fumbling on the keys without direction. I took pleasure in the fact I threw her off balance. I started to pull away and straighten. Withdrawing from the sweet mist of her body, I assumed she'd stop playing. But she repositioned her fingers on the piano, took a deep, calming breath, and started playing Take Me to Church by Hozier. I knew instantly that this was an invite for more kissing. I looked down, she looked up. Our eyes met. If this was how she responded to chaste kisses on the neck, what kind of reaction did she have in bed? "Stop thinking about her in bed, you tool." I sank right back, brushing my thumb along her neck as I nuzzled my nose into the crook of it. "They can see how wet you are for me. It turns them on." "Jesus," she hissed between closed lips. She was beginning to screw up the notes again. I liked the song better under her fingertips, less perfect, more of what I craved, her failure. "It turns me on, too." "Don't do this," she breathed, her labored panting making her chest move up and down quickly. Yet she didn't do one simple thing. She didn't tell me to stop. They can watch if they want. You're not the only exhibitionist in this household, Nem. I taunted.
Wolf,
she warned. It was the first time she said my name, to me anyway. Another wall fell between us. I wanted to raise it back up, but not as much as I wanted to hurt her for exceeding my expectations.
Please don't come on my piano. It would leave a terrible impression in front of our guests. Not to mention, you'd have to lick the seat clean with your tongue.
She slammed her fingers over the keys just as our guests darted up behind us on cue. I made it uncomfortable enough for everyone in the room, and the message hit home. They were to retire to their room and stop drooling over my fiancé. Secretary Hatch, with his wood, and Mrs. Hatch, with her unfortunate choices of charity names and unnaturally stiff hair, bid us adieu for the evening.
This was quite an evening,
Gallia sniffed behind me, arranging her plump figure inside her multi-layered dress. I spared her husband the humiliation of turning around and catching his erection through his pants. Francesco wasn't worth tarnishing my work relationship with him.
A lovely evening.
He cleared his throat, the lust still thick in his voice.
Darling, say goodnight to our guests, I said, still staring down at my future wife with my back to them.
Goodnight,
Francesca murmured, not turning around either as my face was still buried in her shoulder. As soon as the door shut behind them, she jumped up from her seat. I made my way to the door at the same time, disinterested in another third-grade bickering session with a mouthy teenager. West Wing, I clipped, my back to her.
I hate you so much!
She raised her voice behind me, but it remained steady and defiant. She didn't kick anything or try to push me like Kristen did. She cut all my clothes without crying about it like a little pussy. I closed the door on her and walked away. She wasn't worth a response. 10 minutes later, I was in my room, undoing my tie. I'd already had my daily quota of alcohol, so I resorted to sipping water, watching the main street out of my window. I heard my fiancé's heels sauntering across the hallway behind my closed doors. Shortly after, the scent of cigarette smoke crawled into my nostrils. She was trying to tell me she was not going to abide the house rules, but by lighting up a cigarette, she was playing with a much bigger fire. Did she think we were equals? She was about to be served with a huge piece of humble pie. And, unlike her dessert, I'd force-feed her every bite of that dish until the message was clear. I was about to enter my walk-in closet and change when my door flung open.
How could you?
She hissed, her eyes so narrow you could barely make out their unique color. There was a lit cigarette between her fingers. She galloped toward me, but every step was measured and catwalk-worthy.
You had no right to touch me, no right to say those things about my body.
I rolled my eyes. Testing boundaries was very terrible twos of her. But I didn't do liars, and she made it sound like she was a virginal saint who didn't try to touch my cock with her heels and almost came when I kissed her shoulder not so long ago. Unless you're here to suck my cock, please see yourself out of my room. I'd hate to call security and have you removed to a temporary hotel, but I will.
Wolf!
She pushed my chest, losing her footing. I was already riled up about the picture and the loss of the only materialistic thing that I cared about. I didn't respond. She pushed me again, harder. Teenager, I thought bitterly. Out of all the women in Chicago, you are marrying a teenager. I fished my phone from my pocket and punched the extension of my bodyguard. Her eyes widened, and she tried to snatch the phone from my hand. I clamped my hand over her wrist and pushed her away.
What the hell?
She yelled. I said I'd throw you out. I meant it.
Why?
Because you're confused and horny and getting on my nerves. The only reason you're in my bedroom is because you'd like to have sex. Only you'd hate to have it with me. And since I'm not in the business of forcing myself upon women, I am not interested in watching you having a meltdown for half an hour before you figure it out. She growled, but said nothing. More blushing. More sucking on her cigarette. Her lips were made to torture grown men. I was sure of it. Out, I said. Whose picture was it? She asked out of nowhere. None of your business. Did you see who cleaned my room? I'd hired a professional company 3 times a week. They weren't in the habit of throwing things away, but the photo was probably buried between mountains of clothes. Another thing she ruined. Of course, Francesca never bothered to clean her shit up. She had the upbringing of a monarch. Cleaning her own mess wasn't a concept she was familiar with. No, she said, biting on the corner of her thumbnail and looking down. She put out the cigarette in my glass of water. I was going to kill her, and looked straight at me. And I do know why I'm here. You do? I arched an eyebrow, feigning interest. I came here to tell you to never touch me again. Coincidentally, you came here breaking the news while wearing a nightgown that barely covers your tits and shows off every inch of your legs. I looked outside my window again, finding the sight of her unbearable all of a sudden. I caught her in my periphery looking down, surprised by the fact that she was already in her pale blue nightgown. She was such a fucking mess. I'd met a variety of women in my life, but I'd yet to meet a woman who was so hell-bent on seducing me, only to freak out whenever I showed faint signs of interest. Fine. I ran my thumb over my lips, watching the manicured neighborhood with indifference.
Fine?
Yes, you seem like a particularly boring lay as it is.
I'd take being boring over being a psycho any day of the week.
Humiliation looks good on you, Nemesis. Now go, I ordered dryly, sliding my tie from my neck. I watched her reflection in my window as she started to walk toward the doors, stopping with her hand on one of the handles and turning around to face me again. I turned around to meet her eyes.
You know how I knew you weren't Angelo when we kissed? Not because of your height or your scent. It was because you tasted like ash, like betrayal. You, Senator Keaton, taste bitter and cold, like poison. You taste like a villain.
That did it. I stalked over to her, too fast to make her second guess her next move, buried a hand in her hair, my mouth coming down on hers to shut her up. I wrapped my tie around the back of her neck with my other hand, tugging her toward me and binding us together. It was a long, violent kiss. Our teeth clashed, her tongue chasing mine first while I plastered her little body against my doors, grinning into her mouth at the fact that her back hit the round handles. Her lips moving against mine confirmed that she was a liar, and her groin bucking against my own cemented the fact she wanted to be fucked badly. She just didn't like the idea of yielding to me. I tightened my grip on the back of her skull, deepening our kiss. She was dazed, and I knew by the way her hands slid up my chest, cupping my cheeks and drawing me closer to her. It was the same thing she did with Angelo at the wedding. That was how I caught them when I left the restroom, her hands on his cheeks. In one move, she switched her touch from passionate to intimate. She pulled the tie between us, moaning helplessly into my mouth. I drew back instantly. Ours is not a love story. Leave, I barked.
But,
she blinked. Leave! I threw the door open, waiting for her to run away. I made my point, you made yours, I won. Tuck your tail between your legs and get the hell out, Francesca.
Why?
Her eyes widened. She was more embarrassed than hurt, judging by the way she hugged her chest to cover her puckered nipples under her nightgown. She'd never been rejected, but it was her pride, not feelings, which had been wounded. "Because you love another man and are trying to pretend that I am him." I flashed her a sardonic smile, smacked her butt, and gave her a little push out my door. "You said I taste like a villain, but you taste like the victim. Now save whatever's left of your self-worth and leave." I slammed the door in her face, turned around, grabbed the glass of water with the cigarette butt swimming in it, and threw it out the window.
Chapter 7. Francesca. My parents were not going to fight for my freedom. The realization should have struck me sooner, but I clung to that hope like the edge of a cliff, helplessly, foolishly, humiliatingly. I called my mother the morning after Wolf threw me out of his room, telling her about the text messages I'd received from Angelo and about last night's events. Blush hit my face and neck in uneven patches. Terrible shame gnawed at my gut for acting so carelessly last night. True, we were engaged to be married, but we weren't a couple. Not really. Technically, it was just a kiss. But I was there, and there was much more to it. More touching. More grinding. More devouring. More feelings I couldn't pinpoint. Far away from love, yet shockingly close to affection. When my mother heard about Angelo's texts, she berated me for contemplating answering them. "You're an engaged woman, Francesca. Please start acting like one." When my face was so hot with shame I was about to explode, she connected my father to the other line. Together, they informed me, rather tactfully, that Angelo was to attend an upcoming wedding with Emily as his plus one, with my father adding that they'd made a beautiful couple at the bishop's wedding. It was in that moment of clarity when I realized that not only was my father not going to claim me, but that perhaps I didn't want to be claimed by him. The only difference between the monster who currently housed me and the one I'd been born to was that the former made no empty promises or brought me to believe he cared. They say the devil you know is better than the one that you don't, but I didn't feel as though I truly knew my father anymore. His affection apparently depended on the circumstances, and I was to meet each one of his expectations. Last night's humiliation, paired with the fact that my mother changed her tune overnight, and my father was eager for me to please Wolf, made me want to rebel. "I'm sure they look lovely together, Papa. I'm also glad I'll see Angelo around and hear all about his relationship with Emily directly from him." I inspected my muddy nails casually as if my parents could see me. I paced around the garden, taking a break from potting and fertilizing my radishes. Ms. Sterling was pretending to read in the pavilion next to me, her nose stuck in a historical book as thick as her glasses, but I knew she was eavesdropping. In fact, I figured she'd been snooping every time anyone opened their mouths in the house. Cleaners, gardeners, and UPS delivery men included. I'd be shocked to discover she hadn't heard our kiss, then our fight, when Wolf shooed me away. My cheeks heated just thinking about last night. Senator Keaton had yet to leave his room this morning since returning from escorting his guests to his private jet while I was asleep. I'd be content not to see him the remainder of the weekend, month, and the span of my lifetime.
"How do you mean?"
my father demanded. "Why, Papa, I have the best news. My new groom has decided to send me off to college. Northwestern, no less. I've already taken a tour, and I'm filling out an application today." He was so supportive of that decision. I uttered, noticing with satisfaction the thin smile tugging at Ms. Sterling's lips as her eyes remained on the same page for long minutes. I was sure my father was well aware of the fact that Angelo, too, applied for a master's at Northwestern. He was good at connecting the dots. A few days ago, I'd sighed and complained to the garden around me that I needed more pots and a new watering can. The day after, new ones were waiting for me in the shed. She could be nosy, but she was definitely not as bad as my husband-to-be. He even expressed his support to my pursuing a career. Now I just need to figure out what I want to do. I'm thinking a lawyer, or maybe a cop. That last touch was laying it on thick. My father hated lawyers and cops more than he hated child molesters and atheists, with illogic rage that burned in his blood. I'd been my parents' puppet for so long. Clipping the strings felt scary and forbidden. I wore long skirts and dresses I absolutely detested because they liked them. Attended Sunday Mass regularly, even though other church girls usually disliked me for having better clothes and nicer shoes. I even refrained from kissing boys to appease my strict folks. And what good did it do to me? My father sold me off to a senator, and my mother, despite her deep pain and disappointment, was helpless against him. But that did not stop her from discouraging me to pursue the same route as her. She didn't want me to study and get a job. She wanted me to be as stranded as she was.
"Is this a joke?"
My father choked on his drink on the other line.
"No daughter of mine will work," he spat.
"Your future son-in-law doesn't seem to share the sentiment," I sing-songed, momentarily putting my hatred toward Wolf aside.
"Francesca, you have the breeding, the beauty, and the wealth. You were not born to work, Vita Mia. You're rich in your own right, and more so since you're marrying a Keaton," Mama cried out.
I didn't even know the Keatons were a thing before all this. I'd never bothered to ask anyone, least of all my future husband, since money was the last thing on my mind. "I'm going to college. Unless..." It was a crazy idea, but it made sense. A cunning smile touched my lips, and my eyes met Ms. Sterling's from across the garden. She gave me a barely noticeable nod.
"What?"
my father snarled. "Unless you tell me why you gave Wolf my hand, then I'd consider not going. Mainly because then I'd have the full picture. I very much doubted I could change my fate at this point, but I wanted to know what he'd gotten me into to see if I could dig my way out." My father snorted, his glacial tenor stabbing at my nerves.
"I do not discuss my business with women, much less my own daughter."
"What's wrong with being a woman, Papa?"
"You sure acted like a pussy the day you gave me to Wolf Keaton."
"We play different roles," he clipped.
"And mine is to make babies and look pretty?"
"Yours is to continue the legacy of your family and leave the hard-working jobs to people who need them."
"This sounds a lot like you don't respect me as an equal," I hissed, holding the phone between my ear and shoulder and stabbing the trowel in the mud and wiping my forehead simultaneously.
"That's because you're not my equal, my dear Frankie."
The line went dead on the other side. I planted 20 pots of flowers that day. Then went to my room, took a shower, and started filling out my application to Northwestern. Political science and legal studies, I decided, would be my major. In all fairness, I always thought gardening was my calling. But since my father infuriated me to no end, sticking my major in his face was worth going through years and years of studying something I doubted would interest me much. I was Petty McPetson, but I was gaining an education, and it felt good. I hunched over my oak desk when something in the air changed. I didn't have to lift my head to know what it was. My fiancé was here to check on his prisoner bride.
"You have your first dress fitting tomorrow. Go to bed."
From my peripheral, I could see he was not wearing a suit. A white V-neck shirt that highlighted his tan, lean but muscled body, and dark denim that clung low on his narrow hips. He looked nothing like a senator, acted nothing like a politician, and the fact I couldn't box him this way or the other unsettled me. "I'm filling out my application to Northwestern," I replied, feeling heat coating my face and neck again. Why did it feel like he dipped me in liquid fire every time his eyes were on me? And how could I make it stop?
"You're wasting your time."
My head snapped up, and I granted him the eye contact he'd been looking for. "You promised," I growled.
"And I shall deliver."
He pushed off my doorframe and stepped into my room, sauntering toward me.
"You don't need to fill out an application. My people have already taken care of that. You're about to become a Keaton."
Are Keatons too precious to fill out their own college applications? I could barely keep myself from snapping at him. He plucked the documents from my desk, bawled, and slam-dunked them in the trash can by my desk.
"It means you could have drawn dicks in all shapes and sizes on the document, and you'd still get in."
I shot up from my chair, putting some much-needed distance between us. I couldn't risk another kiss. My lips still stung every time I thought of his rejection.
"How dare you?" I thundered.
"You seem to be asking this question a lot. Care to change your tune a little?"
He shoved one hand into the front pocket of his jeans and picked up my cell phone on my desk, scrolling through it with his thumb with easy monotony. My parents forbade me from having a passcode. When my mom gave me back my phone, protecting my privacy was low on my to-do list, seeing as the majority of it had already been taken anyway.
"What are you doing?"
My voice turned eerily calm and shocked at the same time. His eyes were still on my phone.
"Go ahead. Ask again. How dare I, right?"
I was too stunned to form words. The man was a savage in a suit. He taunted and aggravated me at every turn. My father was a stubborn jerk, but this guy was the devil who returned to my nightmares every night. He was hell wrapped in a heavenly, rugged mask. He was fire. Gorgeous to the eye, lethal to the touch.
"Give me my phone right now."
I threw my open palm in his direction. He waved a dismissive hand my way, still reading my text messages. Angelo's text messages.
"You can't do that."
I launched at him, raising my arms to reach the phone. He raised his arm, grabbed me by the waist with his other hand, capturing both my wrists and plastering my hands to his lower stomach over his shirt.
"Move, and you'll see what your anger does to me. A friendly hint, it thrills me, and in more ways than you'd like to know."
A part of me wanted to defy him so he would push my hands down. I'd never touched a man down there before, and the idea of it excited me. My life was already in shambles. My morals were the last things I'd clung on to. And frankly, my fingers were tired from holding them. I moved on principle, and he smirked, scrolling down my texts and tightening his hold on my wrists. He didn't make good on his promise to put my hands on his manhood.
"Are you going to answer, lover boy?"
he asked conversationally.
"None of your business."
"You're about to become my wife. Everything about you is my business. Especially boys with blue eyes and smiles I don't trust."
He dropped my hands, pocketed my phone, and cocked his head, scanning me through his scorn. I wanted to cry. After yesterday's humiliation, not only did he not apologize, but he also taunted me twice today, both by throwing my application in the trash and by reading through my messages. He confiscated my phone as though I was his daughter.
"My phone, Wolf. Give it."
I took a step back. I wanted to hurt him so bad it hurt to breathe. He stared me down, calm and quiet.
Only if you delete Bandini from your contacts.
He's a childhood friend.
Out of curiosity, do you fuck all your childhood friends?
I flashed him a sugary smile. Afraid I'll run off and have sex with Angelo again? The tip of his tongue darted out to lick his lower lip sinisterly.